Speaking of pretty cool, Craig's here.
Hell yeah. Charity is cool.
Charity is cool. Craig is cool. Ryan, you're cool. I'm Tony. I'm cool. This is TH Fantasy, a cool podcast for cool people about the coolest sport in America.
And on this week's episode 45, we're trying to see how many times we can say the word cool.
This is the coolest episode we've ever done.
I know. Pretty cool.
Yeah, cool. So let's hop right into it. We got some cool stuff to get after today. You went second with your number guy last week. So why don't you start with your number 45? Get us going.
Sure. Yeah. So my number 45 this week is Emlyn Tunnel. Emlyn the Gremlin, they call them. He's the first African-American to play for the New York Giants. Also the first African-American to be in the NFL Hall of Fame.
Wow.
In fact, he was a really good defensive player in the NFL, but he grew up in high school and college playing predominantly offensive roles, halfback and stuff. And he even had passing yards. So he was used in a variety of ways. I couldn't really figure out how he translated into the NFL. And they're like, you're going to play safety. Like, okay. But he ended up being like one of the greatest safeties. He was like the original Devin Hester almost when I tell you some of these stats later. He's born in Philadelphia. His college career was at the University of Toledo and Iowa. University of Toledo was 1942, and he didn't continue college until 46 to 47 because obviously, like a lot of those players at the time, they went to wartime stuff.
Yeah.
But interesting, he actually broke his neck in 1942 playing for Toledo, which made him ineligible because he wanted to be in the Army and the Navy, but it made him ineligible. So guess who took him?
Who?
The Coast Guard.
There we go.
So he was able to be in the Coast Guard for like 3 years during World War II. And actually there's like two or three different harrowing stories where he actually saved people's lives.
Sure. Okay. Like a guy that was going to drown or something.
Yeah. Like there was one where they were in like 40 degree water somewhere, and like he jumped in to save this guy risking hypothermia and
damn,
survived. Yeah. And there was another one where they were at like an ammo dump somewhere and something caught on fire and he saved a guy from a fire and ended up getting burned on his hands himself and stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. So let's see. Yeah, he even played for the Coast Guard team. He was then discharged from the Coast Guard in 1946, and he joined up one of my favorite college football teams, the University of Iowa.
Oh, all right. He was a Hawkeye.
Yeah, he was a Hawkeye. Let's see. In 1947, he set an Iowa football single-game record with 155 reception yards on 6 receptions and 3 touchdowns.
There we go.
Dude was balling out. I don't know if that record still holds to today, but being that Iowa's a Big Ten team, it could seem likely that it still stands. 155 yards on 6 receptions, that's pretty crazy.
Sure.
So he did pretty good, and he did pretty good in Iowa, and then he was drafted by the New York Giants in 1947 as a rookie in the 10-game season. Get this, Tony, you'll like this. He had 7 interceptions in 10 games, even having one of those returned for 43 yards and a touchdown.
There we go.
Between 1949 and 1952, he was considered the best pass defender and punt returner. This is where we get into some of those NFL Devin Hester stats, which is why I mentioned Devin Hester earlier.
Right.
In 1951, he had 4 non-offensive touchdowns, had a kickoff return for 100 yards and a touchdown, also 9 interceptions.
Nice.
1952, he had more yards, 924, with interceptions, punt returns, and kickoffs than the 1952 rush leader, Dan Towler.
Damn. Holy shit.
And also, he holds the New York, to this day, the New York Giants franchise record of 3,422 all-purpose return yards.
Okay. Let's go.
Right? He was in 9 Pro Bowls. He was in the championship teams on the Giants in 56 and the Packers in 1961. He had 14 seasons. He played with the Giants until 1958 and then the Packers from 59 to 61.
Okay.
Didn't do too much with the Packers in the later part of his career, but most of his career stats were with the Giants. So he ended up with 79 total interceptions, 1,282 interception return yards, 258 punt returns, and 2,209 punt return yards.
Cool. That's rad as shit.
This guy was a defensive monster.
Yeah, and a special teams monster, it sounds like, too.
Yeah, and like I said, I couldn't figure out why he was mainly playing offense in high school and college, and then all of a sudden the NFL was like, you're going to play safety.
Well, that's funny you should mention that. Before we go too far, you said he's the first African-American to be elected into the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
Yeah, that's what I read, yep.
Is he also the first gremlin?
Probably.
He's got to be the first gremlin.
I think that was the inspiration for the movie Gremlins in the 80s.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, biopic. So, actually, I'm gonna talk about a guy that had a pretty similar high school background. I want to talk about a 45 named Kenny Easley. Kenny Easley, born in Virginia, the first player in Virginia high school football history to run and pass for over 1,000 yards in a season.
Holy crap.
Pretty good. In the 80s, like, that's nuts. So he was recruited by, like, everyone, and he went to UCLA and moved to safety.
Yeah.
And he, not only did he crush it at safety, but he also crushed it in basketball. So in 1981, he was drafted by both the Seattle Seahawks and the Chicago Bulls.
Holy crap.
He could have played with Michael Jordan.
Oh, like, my God. How crazy is that?
But the Seattle, he was picked to play safety for Seattle. He was picked 4th overall. So, like, obviously, that money's going to be much better.
Right.
Drafted in 81. He became the defensive player of the year in 1984. In 1984, the Chiefs played the Seahawks and beat them 45-0. In that game, they ran back 4 interceptions for touchdowns. Easily had one of them.
That's
pretty cool. By 1987, he was injured and was part of trade talks. And then, if you recall, 1987 was the player strike and lockout that shortened the season.
Okay.
Easley was the player, like the Seattle union rep, and was a major voice for the NFLPA trying to get the players to strike. That was the strike that was the NFL players being like, we want free agency, and the league being like, no. He did that, and he pushed for the players to go on strike, even though before that season, Seattle was a favorite to go to the Super Bowl for the AFC.
Really?
Yeah, when Easley was trying to get his teammates to strike, the players that tried to get the players to keep playing were Jeff Kemp, the backup quarterback, who's the son of former Republican vice presidential candidate Jack Kemp. He ran with Bob Dole.
Really? Bob Dole.
And also, the other player that was super opposed to him was Seattle's future Hall of Fame wide receiver Steve Largent, who was also a eventual four-term Republican congressman from Oklahoma. So you've got the best player on the defense versus the best player on the offense about who's going to go on strike. Eventually, Easley and Largent both go on strike. They wouldn't talk for years after this. They ended up being scabs and crossing the picket lines to go back to playing. Eventually the strike ended. Easley would return. The Seahawks ended up losing in the playoffs to Warren Moon and the Oilers on a blown call. So he gets traded after the season, and he believed that it was because of his union leadership that the ownership was punishing him by trading him away.
Sure.
And so they trade him to the Cardinals, and during the physical for the Cardinals, it's discovered that he has a severe kidney disease. So he can't play anymore. He retires and then sues the team, alleging that the team would give him an overdose of ibuprofen for an ankle injury in such a large amount. Like, he was taking 15 ibuprofens a day.
What?
Yeah. So they said that they had big, like, giant machines unlabeled full of pills that you could just go in and take a handful of ibuprofen to reduce swelling. So the court case actually settles out of court. Seattle gives them an undisclosed amount of money. But this case was a national story to help publicize the risks associated with ibuprofen abuse for most of the country. Like, a lot of people didn't know that was a thing before this court case.
Yeah. That's cool.
So after retirement, he owns a car dealership, becomes the head of the African American Car Dealers Association. In 1998, he goes into business with former Bills legend Bruce Smith, owning the arena football team, the Norfolk Nighthawks.
Damn.
The team folds in 2003. Easily, after decades of refusing to affiliate with the Seahawks because of how he felt he was treated, again, eventually in 2003, agreed to be inducted into the Seattle Seahawks Ring of Honor. Paul Allen was like, dude, you need to accept our invitation to be part of the Ring of Honor. It's so important to us that we will not induct another person into the Ring of Honor until you say yes.
Wow.
And Easley was like, okay, well, a lot of the people that fucked me over aren't here anymore, so I can let bygones be bygones. Accepted it. And to this day, his banner is right next to Steve Largent's, which is cool because they ended up nice. Like, they ended up reconnecting and being like, okay, I understand why you were the way you were. And he was an honorary captain and did the coin toss at the Super Bowl when Seattle beat Denver and became inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame in 2017.
Hell yeah.
That, my friend, is Kenny Easley, my number 45.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure the Seahawks gave him like a lifetime supply of ibuprofen too.
As oh, part for of sure. The, oh, yeah. For sure. He's like, dude, you got a fake liver now. You're fine. You can take as many right. as you want.
Yeah.
All right, so the Gremlin and Kenny Easley are 45s. Also, ironically, two black men who in high school clearly showed that they could play quarterback but were moved to a non-quarterback room in college. It was
and the Gremlin, too, was one of the first guys that, like, this – when I go to look for people to look for these numbers, I usually cycle through, like, 8 or 10 of them to see, like, what's the best story or whatever. This right. was the first time that I was like, oh, let's check out this guy. And then I was like, yep, I'm doing this guy this week. I didn't look at anyone else. His yeah. story was so good.
It's a great story. Saving people's lives, being the Gremlin. Right.
Yeah.
All right. So we have some mailbag questions. This is awesome. If people ever wanted to ask us questions, we would love to do this. So we got a couple.
Send them an email. Send them a, but,
message really us on Twitter. Quick.
Yeah, really quick. Did you watch any of the preseason stuff this week?
Oh, bro, I've watched a lot of preseason stuff this week. In fact, we'll talk about that as soon as we're done answering questions. Okay. So let's go ahead and let's take some questions.
So we got, let's talk about like tight ends. One of the questions was like, is it worth reaching for a top tier tight end, tiers 1 to 3, any one of those. Mark Andrews, Kelsey, Kittle, Waller, any of those guys, is it worth really reaching them? Because you're probably going to have to take them within the first 2 rounds. So is it worth blowing one of those good running back wide receiver picks in the first 2 rounds for one of these guys? I say yes for Kelsey and Andrews, but I don't think so for any of the other guys.
So here's the thing. Outside of, you know, Kelsey and Andrews, no. To me, like, you know, the question was like anyone outside of the top three, anyone outside of the top five. After the top two, I'm done. Because if you think about it, like the tier is so steep between
right.
So the top two are in their own tier, the next three are in their own tier, and then there's the blob. The difference right. between the players that are 3 and 5 and the blob is so small. It's like 2 points a game, 3 points a game.
Yeah.
The receivers and running backs you could be getting in those rounds, so much better.
And you're going to be able to get someone like Freiermuth in what? Shit. 10th the round
eighth,
or later.
The eighth, yeah. The ninth. Yeah. And so there's actually, so the second part of the question was when we talked about this pre-show was like, are there any sleepers, any guys you're targeting if you punt entirely on tight ends? Honestly, yeah. The funny thing is like trying to find a sleeper in the blob of tight ends, which by the way, so the blob is like tight ends 5 through 22, right, where they're all within however many points. No, there is no sleeper. Like
I agree as well. Like all you have to do is just take a lottery ticket, pick that one guy to in your draft, and if he doesn't span out in 2, 3, 4 weeks, just go to the waiver wire. There's going to be tons of undrafted tight ends that get a potential opportunity, including some of the rookies that may develop towards the latter half of the year.
And Ryan is like the no kill shelter for tight ends that nobody wants in fantasy football. but I'm, you know, trap, neuter, release. Either I'm streaming tight end or I'm going to take a guy like Mo Alie-Cox or, you know, someone in the middle. Someone that's going to get me 6 points a game. And I know that doesn't seem like a recipe for success, but after you draft the guy and you cut a guy, then you're really just playing week to week. And honestly, the value is not in finding the sleeper at tight end. It's finding the receivers between round 7 and 11 that help you win your league instead of taking a tight end.
True.
Like,
how would you approach like scenarios where you've got 2 flex spots, but they're all around flexes outside of super flexes where you can have tight ends? Would you ever have a tight end spot and then start another tight end in your flex spot?
No, I think that's horrible. And I also got beat in the playoffs last year of my dynasty league by a guy that started 2 tight ends. The only way that I would do that is if I'm playing tight end bully and I have, say, maybe like pick 9 or pick 10 in a draft, and I want to go Kelce Andrews, because then you devalue the rest of the market. And that's a strategy that I can see being viable. But to me, if I see someone starting 2 tight ends, it better be because of an injury or whatever. I don't like carrying 2 tight ends.
I think that's really the only scenarios. You're either through buys or injuries. That's like your only option.
Right. Know? I don't carry 2 tight ends because the likelihood that I'm going to use that tight end is low, especially if I have a guy that I know I can, that will put up between, you know, 10 and however many points.
Sure.
I want that spot as a wide receiver that I think is about to hit, or a running back that's in a good situation. And I want to take a stab at Alexander Mattison or Daryl Henderson or someone like Marlon Mack. You know what I mean? I'd rather have Marlon Mack than a second tight end.
I'm with Jeff Radcliffe. I don't believe the Marlon Mack hype.
I don't either, but I'd rather have him than Albert.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. So did you have another one?
How about thoughts on like drafting like 2 running backs from the same team? Like, you know, ATN and,
Robinson
or Michael Carter and Breece Hall.
It depends, you know, like, are you thinking drafting 2 running backs from the same team, like a handcuff, or drafting 2 running backs on the same team with the express intent of starting both?
I would think it's more of a handcuff situation. I don't think he was asking me about putting them both in your starting lineup.
Because there's one pair of running backs that I would start both at the same time, and that's really Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
But that's it. I don't want any other, like, find me in fantasy, find me the combination of talent and opportunity. That's what I want. And so I like handcuffs, but what I like more are players that I know are going to return me floor every week. That's why when I think about, you know, there's one more team. I'll tell you what, there's one more team that I would have 2 running backs on the same time, sure, and I would comfortably start them. And ironically, they're in the same division as Green Bay, DeAndre Swift and Jamal Williams.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Like, because Jamal Williams is a player that I trust will get the carries while Swift will get the receiving yards.
Sure.
I would rather have that than a Melvin Gordon, Javonte Williams, because those two just eat like from each other's feed.
Right. You know what I'm saying? I think, like, with those examples you gave of Detroit and Green Bay, you're probably going to want to not start them every week. If you're in that situation, you're going to want to play the matchups. Like,
right.
If it looks like it's going to be a shootout, yeah, play both of those guys, because if they score 48 points, the chances of them each having one of the touchdowns are pretty good.
Right. I don't like handcuffs. I don't. I get it. I understand why people play it. Ryan, I know historically you've been a big handcuff guy. If you're in a league that starts 10 players or 11 players, 12 players, and you only have a 5-person bench, it's not worth it.
Right.
Like I don't want, if my space on my bench is limited, I know Ryan, in the league that you commission, there's a larger bench. I like handcuffs in a league with a 7-man bench because I don't need those spots. It's the same reason I don't roster a second tight end if I don't have to. Like,
you can take that chance on that player early in the season, and then week 5, his counterpart goes down, and you don't have to worry about going to the waiver wire. He's already on your roster.
Right. But if it's a 12-team league, I want, or a 12-team league with 5 bench spots, I want every single one of those spots as a guy that I can start every week. Like,
sure.
If everybody in our league rosters 2 quarterbacks except me, that's 23 quarterbacks that are out. So when I'm coming up and my quarterback has a bye, I can just pick up one of the remaining 8, whoever I think has the best chance to show out. And then guess what? As soon as that week's over, get the fuck out. And it's the same thing with tight ends, man. It's the same thing with tight ends. I don't want spots on my bench that aren't going to be important to me. I want to be worried about who to start and sit every week because my guys are so good.
Yeah.
And so I think, so from our discussion here to the mailbag, which, by the way, sick. I say, first off, unless you're playing for those top 2 tight ends, don't worry about it. I don't care about anyone after. I love Kyle Pitts, dude. You know how much I love Kyle Pitts. I have a George Kittle fucking hoodie. I love George Kittle.
Hell yeah.
But like, sure, they're great and they're a step up from the blob, but you know, I'd rather take T. Higgins or DJ Moore, like, or Breece Hall. Wouldn't you rather have any of those guys over Kittle or Pitts?
Right.
Yeah. So to me, I my tiers are a little bit different than everyone else's. I don't even have a second tier. There's just a better blob.
Right.
So all right.
One of the last things he wrote down, and I already know what you and me were going to say. I was like, oh, he's writing in questions. I'll entertain it. He was what's the earliest that you'll draft a defense or a kicker if you have defensive kickers? And I was like, well, me and Tony are both going to say your last 2 picks. He did ask if like there's any sleeper defenses we thought for this year or anything. And I know you're a big defensive guy.
My favorite sleeper defense this year is Green Bay.
Interesting.
It's Green Bay. Green Bay's pace of play is going to slow down immensely. They've made heavy. They drafted. Think about this, man. They got rid of Davante Adams and used 2 first round picks on defensive players.
Yeah, that's true.
So Green Bay's defense was already good. They're going to play against Kirk Cousins, who loves interceptions, the Bears, who can't get anything done, and Detroit. So like, I think Green Bay's the sleeper defense. Now, here's the thing. You're right. Last couple rounds, who cares? I don't mind paying up for an elite defense, but that's 11 independent variables. Look at Washington last year. When Chase Young went down, what happened to that defense?
Yeah.
The defense was essentially the same group of dudes except one, and it took such a hit. I don't want to use a bunch of value there. Now, here's what I've been doing. Our big money league, Ryan and I, our big money league, it drafts on August 30th. That is 12 days before the first Thursday night game. You know what I plan on doing is I plan on not drafting a defense. I plan on drafting a player that, I don't know, that would be a handcuff window for me. That would be Chuba Hubbard, Alexander Mattison. Hold them until the night before the first week, and then drop them and pick up whatever defense you think is best.
That's a good idea.
Because what if someone gets hurt? what if Delvin Cook goes down and all of a sudden I can trade you Alexander Mattison for a great receiver?
Yeah, that's true.
So I wait on a defense. I really do. Green Bay is my sleeper. I think I don't even play matchups as often as I should. I just believe in talent. Dallas, I think, has a pretty high ceiling. New England is always going to be a good fantasy defense. The right. Saints are playing in a terrible division. I don't know. I wait, though. I wait on defenses. I really do, because I think at most you're going to be holding them for... You're going to play them for 4 weeks, and then they're gone anyways.
Right.
So...
And for kickers, I mean, if you're smart and you draft accordingly, you're not going to get Tucker. You're not going to get Robbie Gold. But what you should do is target a kicker from a high-powered offense, an offense, preferably anyone from the AFC West, because they're going to get the most opportunities to score.
I'm a sucker for dome kickers.
Yeah, that's true too.
Here's the thing. The thing, the difference between kickers and defenses for me is I'm more willing to reach on a kicker because that is such a set and forget position.
That's true.
Like, if I have Justin Tucker, I don't have to worry about my kicker until week 13 or whatever, and that's a great feeling. Defenses, I feel like you have to monitor a little bit more closely. So I'm more likely to reach for a kicker, but I also don't really care about kickers. So I'm also perfectly content. It's all about zigging when the field is zagging, right? So if there's a huge run on kickers, that means that... You know, wide receiver 5 might be there that someone else was going to pick next round, but they saw the run and needed to get in. I'd rather sacrifice a kicker for a couple weeks because someone's going to come out of nowhere. That's how it works every year.
Right.
And if your team is solid, you're not using your waiver money or your waiver position on a handcuff. You're using it on the next position you need to fill.
Excellent.
All right. So I have some preseason info dump that I want to share for you, Ryan. This is what we've got from this weekend's game so far.
Sure.
I want you to give me any thoughts you have on this. So let's start with Damian Pierce, who sat at the Texans game this week. And the buzz is because this means he's locked up the starting job in Houston as running back 1.
I would think that's a safe assumption.
Does it matter? Is that offense good enough to support a fantasy relevant running back?
I won't be having, outside of maybe Brandon Cooks, I won't be having any part of that offense this year.
Okay. I have a fun one here. James White retired, so there's more to go around now in the New England backfield. So in the last game, each 3 running backs had a whole drive with the starters. Damien Harris, Ramondre Stevenson, Ty Montgomery. Okay, now I like Pierre Strong a lot in rookie drafts this year, but I think there's a reality where Ty Montgomery gets the James White role, which has historically been a productive one in that offense.
How old is Montgomery now, though?
He's really fucking old.
Yeah, I mean, I would think Ramondre Stevenson gets more involved in those third down pass plays.
Belichick loves experienced vets, and you know that's true.
Yeah.
So that's just something to monitor. I like Stevenson much more than Montgomery, but when we did our team previews, my thing was I want the Patriots running back that's got a role that's the cheapest. That's my strategy for drafting Patriots running backs.
I think that's a good model for picking. Ty Montgomery actually might be good to put in some DFS this year.
I agree. So rumors have been swirling. I'm sure you've heard about this, that Antonio Gibson's position as the running back 1 in Washington is over. Do you believe that?
No, I don't believe it.
Okay. I have no interest in Brian Robinson. He's fucking boring. He's just a slow plodding. He's like a worse James Robinson.
I once again, Washington's a team I'm not going to be too heavily involved in unless those players like fall super and I just am like, that's great value, and I just pick them up.
It's a nightmare. What about
you're not gonna be targeting any of them outside of maybe McLaurin? But
speaking of running backs that everyone's already kind of fading in general, Miles Sanders, no timetable to return with a hamstring injury.
Yeah, I saw that.
Not good. I like Miles Sanders this year, but I like it a little bit less because he is in a timeshare. So I don't know how much I want him as like my.
Well, not only is he in a timeshare, this is why I don't like to take running backs that play with running quarterbacks. Like there's just too much running chances to go around.
Right.
Like he's not a bell cow. He's not going to be the guy they give the ball. He'll be in on first down and Hurts will run the ball. And, and like we saw last year, he didn't have any touchdowns, right?
No, he had zero touchdowns.
Yeah. So boo exactly. any part of the run game outside of Jalen Hurts and Philly.
Fair. James Robinson expected to be ready for week one. One little tidbit there.
They said he's good now.
Yeah.
Okay. It'll be interesting to see how those reps get split.
While we're on James's, James Cook ran for 38 yards yesterday, but Devin Singletary played every snap with the first team offense.
Wait, you mean James Cook's brother?
No, James Cook ran for 38 yards and for Buffalo.
I'm thinking Dalvin Cook. God damn it.
Yeah, Dalvin Sorry. Cook's brother. No, yeah, James yeah, Cook Dalvin. Is Dalvin Cook's brother. Who is James yeah. Cook's brother?
Right. Yes.
But Singletary playing every snap with the first team offense.
I don't think that means anything in week two. If he does it again next week in week four, then we might have a trend.
Okay. Let's move on.
Did James Cook get any reps?
Yeah, he ran for 38 yards.
That's right. None of the touchdowns. Cause I saw the score was like 40 something to.
No, he didn't score.
No.
Jags and Steelers quarterbacks looked okay last night. Trubisky and Pickett both ran with the starters and completed passes to Claypool, Deontay, Pat Freiermuth.
Yeah.
Not bad. Trevor Lawrence looked good.
Yeah, he wasn't too bad. He had over 100 yards, I thought, right?
Yep. And Malik Willis was inconsistent but fun to watch.
Yeah, wasn't bad.
Shouts out to my rookie quarterback to Matt Corral, who is now out for the season with a Lisfranc injury.
What do you think about that Turpin guy in Dallas getting two run back TDs yesterday, last night?
He's on the team.
It's got to be, at least for special teams.
He was on TCU and had a pretty good career. He was kicked off the team because of an assault charge. I didn't see details of it, but he had to go to 29 months of domestic violence counseling. So
29 months? That's like months. 2.5 years.
Yes. So that's like, ugh.
Must have been pretty bad then.
Yeah. So there's a Tyreek Hill player comparison in there somewhere. He was also the 2022 USFL MVP. He led the USFL in all purpose yards and receiving yards. Yeah. So
we need an air horn every time someone says like domestic violence or something.
Oh yeah, the domestic violence air horn.
Yeah. Right.
And please don't copy paste that. So no one edit this and just take that sentence out, please. Okay, so let's talk Romeo Dubs dropped multiple passes again. Again.
Didn't Rodgers tweet something like he wants Cobb, Lazard, and who else? And Watkins to be the 1, 2, and 3.
So he pretty much said that the receivers dropping the ball is unacceptable and all that kind of stuff, and it's going to stop them from getting run. So I saw NBC Sportsnet posted on Twitter on Saturday that Romeo Dubs projects to be the Packers wide receiver 4 when season starts. So that's reasonable. I mean, that's not bad for a late round rookie, but yeah. I think people need to like cool their fucking jets on Romeo Dubs right now. Like relax, y'all.
He'll get his shots. Remember last year when everyone's like, Ja'Marr Chase looks like shit. He's dropping all these balls.
Yeah, but also, you know, Romeo Dubs dropped balls in college too. So we'll see. Chris Olave caught 2 for 28 and a touchdown, his first career touchdown in the preseason. Looked all right.
Everyone's saying he's looking good.
He might be someone that I look at near the end of rookie drafts, but I don't know. We were both kind of watching the Cowboys Chargers game last night. Did you see Jalen Tolbert had a opportunity for a touchdown but couldn't keep his feet in bounds?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, also, what did I text you last night too? That happened. Mason Rudolph got intentional grounding and it ended up being a safety in the end zone.
Outstanding work. Outstanding work. George Pickens ran the second most amount of routes for the Steelers first team, only behind Deontay Johnson. So Claypool was in the slot and Pickens and Deontay were on the outside, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Jahan Dotson ran every route for Washington again this week, which is good news.
Cool.
Josh Palmer looked good last night for the Chargers.
Yeah.
Caught a deep ball and he caught a screen pass and weaved his way in and out for a touchdown. Hey, one of my preseason tight ends, Chig Okonkwo, scored a touchdown.
What?
For Tennessee.
Oh, also, a guy who's like the number four tight end in Kansas City, Mr. Jody Fortson, got two touchdowns.
The handcuff to Travis Kelce. The big brain. The big brain move is not to handcuff running backs. It's to handcuff tight ends.
And Noah Gray got a couple good catches. I always think that Gray's the handcuffed Kelce.
Oh, for sure.
You never know.
The rookie wide receiver in Tennessee that won't stop turning heads is Kyle Phillips.
Kyle Phillips, yeah.
The UCLA Bruin, the little Hunter Renfrow. He's already got a nickname, by the way. He's the professor.
Really?
Yep. He's been their go-to kick and punt return man, and I've been operating out of the slot. Man, he's been getting open a ton.
Yeah.
I look now, I have him in three out of four dynasty leagues. Like,
for real?
If you're doing late rookie drafts for dynasty leagues, Kyle Phillips is someone that I'm eyeing in the third round. Don't expect him to do a ton this year, but he's making plays. Treylon Burks was getting open a lot, but I'm watching Malik Willis, and he's not looking. Like, Malik Willis, as soon as there's any pressure, and by the way, there was a ton, he's just like, all right, I'm running.
Does Treylon Burks use, instead of a mouth guard, he just has an inhaler there? It just stays in his...
Dude, I'm watching him out there. He is panting hard when they're lined
up. For real?
Oh, dude, you need a condition. I feel terrible watching this.
I haven't had an opportunity to... I saw a little bit of that game, but I didn't see him play.
Yeah, he didn't do much. I'm hoping that during the season, when the season starts, he'll get it moving. I really think you can't stop Treylon Burks. It's an adjustment period, so...
Sure.
We'll go there. Christian Kirk caught 5 of 7 passes. Looked pretty good. Something nice to keep an eye on. He's a guy that I like late, not going to lie.
It's hard to pick someone early from the Jags offense.
Gabe Davis caught a touchdown on a beautiful Josh Allen throw.
Hell yeah.
I think the most intriguing story here is that the starting offense had 10 snaps for Buffalo, and the slot receiver on 7 of those plays was Isaiah McKenzie, and Jameson Crowder was the slot on only 2.
Really?
Yep. If Isaiah McKenzie gets the Cole Beasley role, like, man, that's a total steal. Like, that's a startable weekly high floor asset.
Yeah.
So
yeah, McKenzie got involved a little bit last year.
He did. He was a DFS darling that one week that Beasley was out.
Yeah.
And he came through too. Like, he was, I think he was like wide receiver 4 that week or something like that.
He was that good?
Last year against New England, Isaiah McKenzie caught 11 of 12 targets for 125 yards and a touchdown.
Wow.
He had 23.9 PPR points that week.
Damn.
Yeah, so Isaiah McKenzie, like, obviously that's not something to expect, but that's definitely a ceiling for a player like that.
Yeah, take a watch. If Diggs gets hurt or anyone gets hurt, he's going to slot up.
All right, so that is episode 45. A little bit of preseason news.
This was a good one, yeah.
Yeah, next week we'll have a little bit more clarity on who's in, who's out. I'm sure there'll be a whole nother, you know, series of things about players getting hurt and starters and risers and fallers.
I know like most of our leagues are drafting not this week, but the following week, starting like next Sunday, we have work league draft. So I'll bring some more like draft strategy questions.
That sounds great.
These were questions that were actually emailed to me. So I'll see if I can get some more email questions, or I'll just come up with some stuff. We focused on tight ends and running backs. Maybe I'll try and get some wide receiver stuff in there.
Yeah, that'd be great. Anyone that's listening, feel free to send us your questions. I would love to talk this shit, and like it's hard when it's just us, you know, just coming up with shit. So until next week, I think that's all for me. Anything else for you, Ryan, before we go?
I don't think so. We're trying to do shorter episodes, so
yeah, only 45 minutes today. That's not too bad.
I think this is a good avenue to stop.
Yep. So we'll see you guys next week, and by then we'll be even closer to football. We are what, like 3 Sundays away, and by the time we talk next, we'll be even closer. And so until next week, Ryan, it's good seeing you. Craig, get the fuck out of here.
Good seeing you, Tony. Everyone else, have a good rest of your week.
Good night, everybody.
Night.
James Cook is Dalvin Cook's brother. Who is James Cook's brother?